Here's the way it should be. Let's put the seniors in jail and the criminals in nursing homes. This would correct two things in one motion. Seniors would have access to showers, hobbies, and walks. They would receive unlimited free prescriptions, dental and medical treatment, wheelchairs. They would receive money instead of having to pay it out. They would have constant video monitoring, so they would be helped instantly if they fell or needed assistance. Bedding would be washed twice a week, and all clothing would be ironed and returned to them. A guard would check on them every 20 minutes. All meals and snacks would be brought to them. They would have family visits in a suite built for that purpose. They would have access to a library, weight and fitness room, spiritual counseling, a pool and education, and free admission to in-house concerts by nationally recognized entertainment artists. Simple clothing, in other words, shoes, slippers, PJs, and legal aid would be free upon request. There would be private, secure rooms provided for all with an outdoor exercise yard complete with gardens. Each senior would have a PC, TV, phone, and radio in the room at no cost. They would receive daily phone calls. There would be a board of directors to hear any complaints, and the ACLU would fight for their rights and protection. The guards would have a code of conduct to be strictly adhered to, with attorneys available at no charge to protect the seniors and their families from abuse and neglect. As for the criminals, they would receive cold food. They would be left alone and unsupervised. They would receive showers once a week. They would live in tiny rooms for which they would have to pay $5,000 per month. They would have no hope of ever getting out. Sounds like justice to me, somebody said. God, is he interested in justice or in fairness? Exodus chapter 21, verse 1 says this. Now, these are the judgments which thou shalt set before them. And then the rest of the chapter on into the succeeding chapters is about the judgments that God wants to be set before his people. Judgments. The primary sense of that word is to exercise the processes of government according to the theological word book of the Old Testament, particularly the judicial branch of government. So judgments is the carrying out of justice. You may wonder why we would spend time going through chapter 21, chapters 22, and so on. Why would we spend time going through these judgments? Because you would say, that has nothing to do with us today. To the contrary, it's very relevant to today. I'm going to be spending time tonight giving illustrations as to why God's interest in justice is just as relevant today in 2014 as when this was written. God is interested, God is concerned about justice, and we need to understand that. God is a God of justice. I'm going to have on the screen here for you, if this thing will work, it's not responding, Jesse, so you might have to poke ahead on that. Can you advance it for me, please? While he's working on that, go to Deuteronomy chapter 16. And there's the verse that we're going to be looking at. Deuteronomy chapter 16. Am I going to have to reboot this or... There we go. We've got it. Very good. Thank you. Now it's up on the screen for you. Judges and officers shalt thou make thee in all thy gates, which the Lord thy God giveth thee, throughout thy tribes, and they shall judge the people with just judgment. There's the word that you find in Exodus 21, verse 1. Well, what is the opposite of just judgment? Because it says there, you shall judge the people with just judgment. Look at the next verse. Thou shalt not wrest judgment or distort judgment. Thou shalt not respect persons, neither take a gift. What does a gift do? A gift doth blind the eyes of the wise and pervert the words of the righteous. Are you familiar with any judges who take bribes? Are you familiar with any politicians who take bribes in order to pass legislation that is not accurate, that is not just, but they take bribes. This is what God is saying He does not want His people to do. God was just as concerned about justice then as He is today, and He's just as concerned about justice today as He was then. In Israel, He is concerned about justice. In His church today, He is concerned about justice. Not fairness. He's concerned about justice. And this particular verse, these two particular verses, are an anticipation of a problem. Respecting peace people and taking bribes. Respecting people with money more than people who may not have the money. Giving certain people a pass. As pastor, I purposely do not know what people give in the offering. Why? This is part of that reason. I don't want to be found, because this is natural, for someone to favor somebody who's giving more. That is not justice. True justice is what God is concerned about. Not as in our lately misnamed Department of Justice, which would more accurately be called today the Department of Injustice. When you see what is taking place. Today, people in America are more concerned with equality or fairness than they are with justice. This is why I'm saying that this message is relevant for us today. Because today people talk about, well, that's not fair. That's not the question. The question is that just? Is God more concerned about justice or fairness? Fairness is based upon emotion, whereas justice is based upon the truth of the law. You ever get to a place where you're emotionally involved in a situation with somebody, and you're so emotionally involved that you can't think straight? Your emotions are overriding your sense of what is right and what is wrong. That happens with us all the time. And that's why there has to be something outside of myself that determines what is right and wrong. Because there are times when I would think that something that is right or wrong is based upon my emotions. I might see somebody who seems to be getting the bad end of a deal, and my heart goes out to them, and I have this pity. And instead of thinking about what is just, I think about what is fair or not fair. That is a situation, that is the propensity all of us have, is to do what is fair, what we think is fair, which is based upon how I feel, rather than, no, this is what is just. This is what has to take place. Today you hear about social justice. Social justice is the cry of the religious left who try to claim scriptural support for redistributing wealth, folks. They call it social justice. They confuse the word justice with their sense of fairness. It would more accurately be called social fairness because it has nothing to do with justice. It is social doing something based upon emotions rather than what is right and what is wrong. So social justice is a misnomer. It is more accurate to say social fairness. It's like somebody once said, it is really a way of trying to disguise communism as Christianity. And let's be blunt, that's exactly what it is. Now, I'm not trying to get political tonight. I'm just telling you that what we see in Exodus chapter 21 is relevant to us today. God is interested not in fairness. He is interested in justice. If a man doesn't work, neither should he. That's called, in our world today, that's not fair. But the Bible says it is just. But we, oh, well, I feel sorry for him. Then give him your own money. Don't take mine and give it to him. There is a man, and I've mentioned this man before, I've given you his name, I've given you his picture. His name is Jim Wallace with a group, an organization called Sojourners. He is a liberal of liberals, and yet he will tell you that he's a Christian. He is an advisor to President Obama. He talks much about social justice. Remember when President Obama appointed his first Supreme Court justice? You may not remember this whole argument that was taking place. He stated that he wanted someone who would have a compassionate heart. Someone who would have a heart for the poor and downtrodden and who would concentrate on their specific interests and needs. I believe his exact words were this. This comes from a man by the name of Walter Williams. We need somebody who's got the heart to recognize, the empathy to recognize what it's like to be a young teenage mom, the empathy to understand what it's like to be poor or African American or gay or disabled or old. And that's the criteria by which I'm going to be selecting my judges. Now, I'm going to say this again. What Exodus chapter 21 talks about is just as relevant for us today as it was back then. Because the judges which should be selected should not be selected on their ability to empathize with somebody. Judgment should take place with the ability to say, this is the law and this is what will happen. You learned when we went through the exchange that God is holy and cannot overlook sin. God is just and, God is holy and cannot tolerate sin. God is just and cannot overlook sin. But in our society where fairness is the big thing, we tend to, well, let's overlook that. Let's slip that one under the rug. Because that would hurt my friend. That would hurt my loved one. Sometimes justice requires that even somebody I love gets punished. What is the role of a Supreme Court justice? It is to recognize that our Constitution represents the rules of the game, so to speak. The Supreme Court justice is a referee. He's got to know the rules of the game. I'm not belittling the importance of our Constitution. I'm just bringing it down to our level where we can say, you know what? A Supreme Court justice should be like a football referee, since everybody's mind is on football right now. There you go. In a football game, let me ask you something. Should the referee be more interested in empathy or justice? Should empathy influence a referee's calls? In the game that's taking place even right now, should the referees empathize with the team with the most injured players? Hey guys, come here. All the other refs, let's get together. They've got more injured, so let's start making calls on this other team. Let's look for them. Would that be just? See, that's what's taking place when you appoint a Supreme Court justice and say, we need to empathize. They've got more injured players. Or should the referees be more concerned about the team with more blacks? Or with the team with guys who weigh less? Or should they empathize with the team whose players don't get paid as much? You say, that's crazy. That's what's taking place in our land today. That's what takes place in our world today. We're told, let's empathize with people who are disadvantaged. Even when they break the rules, well, because he's poor, let's help him out a little bit. That's injustice. When you picture Lady Justice, how is she pictured? What's happening to her eyes? You see the blindfold? And that often appears on court buildings. Why? Because Jesus said in John 7:24, judge not according to appearance, but judge righteous judgment. And yet this is what we see more often. I don't know if you've ever heard of a man by the name of Michael Medved. He's a Jewish man. And he wrote an article soon after the Supreme Court justice was appointed by Obama. And he said, the core mistake of liberalism involves the confusion of charity and justice. How do we know it's a disastrous error to blur the distinction between these two timeless virtues? Because the Bible specifically warns us against it. You never blur the distinction between charity and justice. And then he goes on and gives this verse, which is a verse I'd like to go to. Ye shall do no unrighteousness in judgment. There's that word. Thou shalt not respect the person of the poor, nor honor the person of the mighty. But in righteousness shalt thou judge thy neighbor. I am not to give more of a leeway or more weight to the person who is poor simply because he's poor. If he committed a crime, he's just as much guilty as the rich man who committed a crime. And when it says, ye shall do no unrighteousness in judgment, it means you shall do no injustice in judgment. And then, in that particular verse that you see on the screen, he gives examples. Ruling in favor of someone just because he's poor, or because they are great, where it says the person of the mighty. That, folks, would be injustice. If I'm going to have compassion, that is a personal obligation, not the policy of a jury, not the policy of a judge. And the warning against tilting the scales of justice toward the poor is followed just three verses later by chapter 19 and 18 there in Leviticus, where it says, thou shalt love thy neighbor as thyself. That is your personal responsibility. But loving your neighbor does not mean you can pervert justice if he happens to be great or if he happens to be poor. Question, is our system of taxation in America just? No. I'm quoting somebody here. It very clearly represents a society organized to favor the poor in a way that violates unbiased justice. And that's why you have people who contend for a flat tax. The poor man pays 15%, just like the rich man pays 15%. Everybody has blood, sweat, and tears in this so-called game. Everybody pays taxes. Folks, feeling sorry for someone may cause you to do something that is unjust. Look at this verse, Deuteronomy 25:1. If there be a controversy between men, and they come unto judgment, that the judges may judge them, then they shall justify the righteous and condemn the wicked. There's nothing there about status in society. There's nothing there about anything else. Color of skin, nothing. It's if a man does righteousness, then he shall be justified. If a man does wickedly, he should be condemned, regardless of skin color, regardless of anything else. When we say that God is just, we refer to the fact that God cannot overlook sin. He is just. Here's a good verse for you to memorize. It's Deuteronomy 32:4. He is the rock. His work is perfect. For all his ways are judgment. A God of truth and without iniquity, just and right is he. Would you say that with me together, please? Deuteronomy 32:4. Let's say it with the reference before and after. Deuteronomy 32:4. He is the rock. His work is perfect. All his ways are judgment. A God of truth and without iniquity, just and right is he. Deuteronomy 32:4. Memorize that verse. It's a good verse to memorize. That's the God we serve. And because that's his character, he wants us to be of the same character. He says, be ye holy for I am holy. And now he's going to lay out for his people judgments. And you'll see here in Exodus chapter 21, that what does he talk about? The very first thing, beginning in verse 2. If thou buy an Hebrew servant, here's a slave. And so you've got from verses 2 through 11, slavery injustice. You say, well, keeping slaves is wrong. Oh, I'd love to take a poll right now. Because I know I'd get a whole bunch of Yankees. Oh boy, I just gave it away, didn't I? Slavery injustice, verses 2 through 11. Then there's injury injustice in verses 12 through 36. Injury, and if somebody injures somebody, what do you do about that? This is where you're about an eye for an eye, tooth for a tooth. Injury injustice. Why? God is concerned about justice. So there you go back to chapter 20. We read and studied the Ten Commandments in verses 1 through 17. That's where the Ten Commandments are given. Those Ten Commandments are now followed by judgments concerning the relations of Hebrew with Hebrew. So God will, right now in Exodus 21, give his people judgments so that decisions they make are not based upon some momentary whim or emotion, but upon what he commands them ahead of time. And these judgments will be in keeping with the laws that he has already given. You see, the judgments are going to be based upon the Ten Commandments. God, folks, is interested in justice. If he's interested in it, you should be as well. This is what we should do in our churches, but let's go down a little bit further more. This is what we should be doing in our families. This is how we should be disciplining children. But you know what it's like, and I went through this when we were talking about biblical principles of parenting. Your child disrupts there at the store. You say, when you get home, you're going to get it. What happens on the way home? Little Johnny is being a little angel all the way home. And you get home, and what has overtaken? Emotions. Now the emotions are there, and the sense of justice has fled. And little Johnny doesn't get justice. He gets empathy. Because I remember when I was a little kid, man, those spankings hurt. But I'm not going to do this to him. And who's hurt by this? Little Johnny. He did not get justice. This is what we see taking place in our country. A lack of justice. When Black Panthers stand outside of a voting booth, those men should be taken to justice. When something takes place in Benghazi and there are people who are covering up, there should be justice. When there's this fast and furious taking of guns into Mexico and some of our people are killed, there should be justice. And you could go on and on and on about the injustices that are taking place in our country today. And we could talk about that a lot, but let's bring it down to us now. Hey, where are we allowing injustices in our lives? What are we doing? Are we dealing justly with our friends and with our neighbors? When I have an obligation to pay somebody, when they have given me a service, did I pay them? Am I keeping up with my debts? Are we being just? Am I keeping my word? Am I on time? Am I doing that which is right? Am I keeping my obligations? How many applications can you make here? There's so many things that we could talk about here. God's going to talk about them. Hey, if you buy a Hebrew slave, here's what I want to take place. Let's read that. Verse 2. We're not going to study this tonight, but let's read it. Verse 2. If thou buy an Hebrew servant, 6 years he shall serve. And in the seventh, he shall go out free for nothing. If he came in by himself, he shall go out by himself. If he were married, then his wife shall go out with him. If his master have given him a wife, and she have borne him sons or daughters, the wife and her children shall be her masters, and he shall go out by himself. You say, that's not fair. It's just. This slave knew this law before time. He knew that to marry this girl, this is what would take place. But he's got a decision. Verse 5, and if the servant shall plainly say, I love my master, my wife, my children, I will not go out for free. Then his master shall bring him unto the judges. He shall also bring him to the door or unto the doorpost. And his master shall bore his ear through with an awl, and he shall serve him forever. And if a man sell his daughter to be a maidservant, she shall not go out as the men servants do. If she please not her master, who hath betrothed her to himself, then shall he let her be redeemed. To sell her unto a strange nation, he shall have no power, seeing he hath dealt deceitfully with her. And if he have betrothed her unto his son, he shall deal with her after the manner of daughters. If he take him another wife, her food, her raiment, and her duty of marriage shall he not diminish. And if he do not these three things unto her, then shall she go out free without money. Then you start going into these laws of injuries. He that smiteth a man so that he die, what should happen to him? Put him to death. If a man lie not in wait, but God deliver him into his hand, then I will appoint thee a place whither he shall flee, the cities of refuge, the Bible talks about. But if a man come presumptuously upon his neighbor to slay him with guile, thou shalt take him from mine altar that he may die. And he that smiteth his father or his mother, what's going to happen to him? He shall surely die. He that stealeth a man, this is kidnapping, and selleth him, or if he be found in his hand, he shall surely be put to death. And he that curseth his father or his mother shall surely be put to death. And if men strive together and one smite another with a stone or with his fist, and he die not but keepeth his bed, if he rise again and walk abroad upon his staff, then shall he that smote him be quit. Only he shall pay for the loss of his time and shall cause him to be thoroughly healed. And if a man smite his servant or his maid with a rod and he die under his hand, he shall surely be punished. There is no passes for somebody who abuses his slave, according to this passage. Verse 21, notwithstanding the continued day or two, he shall not be punished, for he is his money. If men strive and hurt a woman with child, so that her fruit depart from her, and yet no mischief follow, he shall surely be punished, according as the woman's husband will lay upon him, and he shall pay as the judge is determined. Advocates of abortion will go to this verse and say, see, the baby died, nothing has to be done to him. When we get to that passage, we're going to explain that verse. Verse 23, and if any mischief follow, then thou shalt give life for life, eye for eye, tooth for tooth, hand for hand, foot for foot, burning for burning, wound for wound, stripe for stripe. And if a man smite the eye of his servant or the eye of his maid that it perish, he shall let him go free for his eye's sake. And if he smite out his manservant's tooth or his maidservant's tooth, he shall let him go free for his tooth's sake. If an ox gore a man or a woman that they die, then the ox shall surely be stoned and his flesh shall not be eaten, but the owner of the ox shall be quit. But if the ox were wont to push with his horn in time past, and it hath been testified to his owner, and he hath not kept him in, but that he hath killed a man or a woman, the ox shall be stoned, and his owner shall also be put to death. If there be laid on him a sum of money, then he shall give for the ransom of his life whatsoever is laid upon him. Whether he have gored a son, or have gored a daughter, according to this judgment shall it be done unto him. If the ox shall push a manservant or a maidservant, he shall give unto their master 30 shekels of silver, and the ox shall be stoned. And if a man shall open a pit, or if a man shall dig a pit, and not cover it, and an ox or an ass fall there, and the owner of the pit shall make it good, and give money unto the owner of them, and the dead beast shall be his. And if one man's ox hurt another's, that he die, then they shall sell the live ox, and divide the money of it, and the dead ox also they shall divide. Or if it be known that the ox hath used to push in time past, and his owner hath not kept him in, he shall surely pay ox for ox, and the dead shall be his own. Then you get into the next chapter. Stealing. What do you do about stealing? Justice shall be served. God is a God of justice. Let's say this verse again together as we close. Reference before and after. Deuteronomy 32:4. He is the rock. His work is perfect. For all his ways are judgment. A God of truth and without iniquity. Just and right is he. Deuteronomy 32:4. Father, I pray that as we see who you are, your character, you are the rock. Your work is perfect. For all your ways are judgment. You are a God of truth.